fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Cool. Well, it's Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn, and I'm here again with Ian Scheller, who has not been on the podcast for a long time.
Yes, I've been delving into the realm of semi-weekly updates.
Yeah, no, well, they've been awesome. I love the random news update, and it's good to have you back on the podcast, though, because we haven't really chatted nerd stuff.
I know. It's good to be here. It really is. Yeah, there's actually a ton of news that came out this week. I'm hoping to squeeze another news update in just with the announcement of all the superhero stuff going on and, you know, Pacific Rim, the new trailer. Oh, my God.
That thing that was the WonderCon footage, and I was at WonderCon and wanted to go to that, and I just got so wrapped up in wandering around the floor, and by the time I realized it, I was like, ah, crap, I missed it. So, Wow. Yeah.
Loved
that
it.
Looks awesome.
I don't care if it's an awful, I don't care if it gets rated negative ratings. I have to see it.
I mean, that's the thing is, the only thing, I'm still worried about, like, the aerobics dudes in the head
yes.
of the robot,
you
know?
I'm kind of curious to see how they do it. It's interesting in the trailer how they have that little segment that's like, and the two pilots meld their minds. And I'm like, well, why do they need to meld their minds to drive a robot?
Yeah, there's all these questions which are, you know, kind of, you know, the big question in my mind was like, why do you need two? Why can't it just be one?
Right. You know? Why do you need two?
And then why do they have to have synchronized, like, swimming, whatever, aerobics, you know, moves.
Yeah, it's like an elliptical machine, right?
Yeah. It's like synchronized elliptical, which, you know, is not an Olympic sport and will probably never be. That is the only thing that I'm really, really concerned with, that's going to look really silly. But, I don't know, Guillermo del Toro will pull it out, I think.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I think. But that was a fantastic trailer, but let's talk about what you've been wanting to talk about, because it's really funny, because, well, what you've been wanting to talk about is The Dark Knight Returns Part 2 for like ever, and what's really funny is that we're finally getting around to talking about that on the tail end of Part 1, which we did several months ago.
Right.
But the new DC Comics, like, straight to DVD Blu-ray release is coming out next Tuesday, and we're finally getting to talk about the previous release, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, a part-time fanboy could do so much.
Yeah, I know. Superman Unbound comes out next week, and I've already pre-ordered that, but
wow.
So we'll see. It's getting kind of mixed reviews on Amazon, but all right. Mm. So you liked Dark Knight Returns Part 2, Part 2, and let's go over why you liked it, because I didn't hate it, but I wasn't crazy about it. So go over the positive. Why don't we start positively?
Okay. Well, here's the thing. So I had seen the first one. Some of our fans remember from our first podcast, I saw the first one in a theater, and that was with the cast was there, and the production, you know, the director, producer were there.
Yeah, you went to a screening.
Right, and that, I didn't realize, but when I first seen that, I'm like, man, the picture is really washed out. I go, they didn't do a good job on this at all. And it turned out, of course, I was watching a projection of a DVD. So the second time I saw it, I actually watched one again to warm up for two, and then watched two.
Yeah.
And this time it was on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And it was on a very huge television.
Yeah.
And I had just seen The Hobbit. And and then, you know, it was kind of a day of just movies and debauchery.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that you watched The Hobbit and then Dark Knight Part 1 and Dark Knight Part 2, like, all in a row?
And then Year One after that.
Oh, my God. That's insane. You don't have any children. Like, no, there's no way.
I think Heidi had gone out for the day, and I said, hey, she was out of town, actually. I think she was back east, and my buddy called me randomly. He's like, do you have – it was my buddy Adam you met.
Yeah.
Adam Gertler from what's it called? He's from The Best Thing I Ever Ate and Kid in a Candy Store. So
what are those movies or?
No, those are, he's a chef on TV, and I'm so bad with the networks that his new show's coming out in June. But that's Adam. He's a huge Batman fan. And
yeah,
you know, so he's like, do you want to see The Hobbit? I said, look, there's only one way I'm seeing The Hobbit, and that's if I'm going in there altered. And it was the kind of thing where it was like, I go, you know, I'm glad you called because, you know, Heidi's out of town. So it became like movie day. And I love The Hobbit because I did go into it altered, but I also went into it thinking, you know what, whatever this movie is, I'm going to appreciate it. And I actually loved it. That's another story. Hey, did we ever do a Hobbit?
No, podcast? We never did a Hobbit. We could talk about The Hobbit because I bought it on Blu-ray, sight unseen. I did not see it in the theater, and I was just like, I'm going on faith, and I'd wanted to see it in the theater, and I really liked it. I think it's flawed. I think it's really flawed, but the genius that Peter Jackson has is, first of all, the Blu-ray looks amazing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and there's all that introductory stuff, which I don't think needs to be in there. But let me tell you, the genius of Peter Jackson, first of all, this movie's like almost 3 hours long. So I had to watch it in chunks because, I'm a dad. And it wasn't the fact that I was bored with it. It was just that I had to watch it in chunks. But I can't imagine sitting and watching that thing for 3 hours in the theater. Well, I would have lost my mind.
Again, I had medicinal aids. And, and there was like no one in the theater. And I got to tell you, I did not like the previous Lord of the Rings at all.
Any of them?
Couldn't stand them.
Oh, you're crazy. Those things are awesome.
Could not stand it. But the reason I went and saw this one was because of Martin Freeman. Is that his name?
Which, the lead actor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I've been watching him on Sherlock, which actually you had recommended for me.
Awesome show.
So amazing show.
Yeah.
And the way he carried it to me was done so well because I enjoyed watching his performance instead of the Three Stooges who were in the other.
It's different.
It is different, but I love the CG. I love the battle scenes. I felt like I could see everything. I love the music, and it felt to me like a stage play. And I just love the whole vibe of that movie. So after that, we hit the ramen joint, Yamadaya, which is on Washington Boulevard in Sepulveda. Then it was time for part two of The Dark Knight Returns. So the only way to get it right was to watch part one again.
Yeah, which I did as well.
And I'm glad I did, because all of a sudden I'm seeing it in Blu-ray, and yes, all the stuff we talked about of there being a flatness to it and almost a collage type sparseness to the art direction, that was all still there, but it was bright. And I was just like, hey, this isn't what I remember, and I really enjoyed it. Then it was time for part two, and I enjoyed, I think, part two a little bit better because of the, you know, of course you have Superman in there. You have the Joker sequence, which was actually my favorite sequence. I mean, that was just chilling to me.
That sequence was probably where they put most their money in, I think.
I think so too. I mean, it on its own as a 5 minute short, it was some of the best stuff I'd seen. Just, I mean, and completely manic and over the top. And then also the stuff with, you had the president in there. And there was stuff in there where, as as I remembered, when I was younger, I didn't really understand, you know, what was happening. So seeing it in this format kind of brought that all back and just made me had a good appreciation for it. And I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed it. I carry around. So my buddy kept the Blu-ray versions, but it came with the regular definition DVDs. Yeah. So he just gave those to me. Oh, and I carry them around with me. And when the mood strikes me, I just pop it in. And but it's really more just I like keeping it close to me. So I got to say, I on second viewing, I really liked it. We could start with I mean, there are some weaknesses I could definitely nitpick at. And if I would start.
So let's go back to The Hobbit for a second, because okay. I just want to say what I have to say about The Hobbit. First of all, unlike you, I love the first three Lord of the Rings. I think they're fantastic. I think, except for like the very end of the third one, which I think a lot of people agree, which is like very botched in my opinion. But I think they're very tight films. They sort of like reintroduce like fantasy Dungeons and Dragons to like the popular culture, and they're very, you know, spectacle filled. Like you're just like, oh wow, and that's kind of what the strength of The Hobbit was for me, Peter Jackson's genius, because after I saw it on Blu-ray, you know, I went into work and, you know, I was talking to some work friends about it, and they're like, oh, how did you like it? And I was like, well, you know, the genius behind Peter Jackson is the fact that, like, as soon as things kind of, like, settle in or getting slow, it's like they're climbing a mountain, and then all of a sudden there's this like, giant, like, rock giants fighting, and they're throwing boulders at each other, and there's lightning, and they're just like, ah! And then the mountains get up, and they start moving, and you're just like, what the fuck is this? Like, I was just, like, sitting there. I wasn't even in a theater. I was watching it on Blu-ray, I'm like, oh, my God, there's giant mountain people, like, freaking out, and, like, they're hanging on for their lives. Like, only Peter Jackson, like, I can't think of a modern filmmaker who combines like certain aspects of character development, like you know, they're wandering around and then all of a sudden there's this army of like orcs or trolls or whatever, and they're like, ah! And it's like, it's crazy. It's just like, that's his genius. He delivers, like, when it's time for like the big spectacle and like widescreen aspect and like the thing of like a world that you're not going to see anyplace else, like, Peter Jackson knows what's up. But I do think that it's too long. It doesn't need to be 3 hours long. There's a lot of stuff, like, I think the whole prologue stuff could have been cut out. Chop cut that out. You don't need it. You don't need to see Frodo again, you know what I mean? You don't need like that whole like, oh hey, you could just start from the beginning, you know. And a lot of the dwarf stuff, you know, where they come and invade his home, it's cute, but it's a little overrun, you know, a little drawn out.
I love that. I mean, when I see what you're saying totally, but when they started that slow, it made me just sit back and be like, okay, I'm just gonna let this unfold.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't know, I really felt like I got my money's worth. And it feels like you're on a journey, like you're saying. Like, it feels like it's definitely a dude's kind of movie, because it's like a road trip in a way. It's like mystical road trip. And when, that monster scene with the rocks, and I mean, you're just like, you're in the middle of it. You're literally in the middle of it. And it's awesome.
I was sitting there thinking like, oh, I should have seen this in the theater. But then by the time it ended, I was like, there's no way I would make it through this in the like 3 hours. There's just no way I would make it through it in the theater. It just wasn't going to happen. But I'm glad I bought the Blu-ray. I don't feel cheated in any way. And I don't know about the second part, like if I'll see it in the theater, but I was very blown away by it, certain aspects of it, where I was just like, and I do think that what's his face from Sherlock, the lead actor, I think he definitely carries it well. You know, he's very different, like you said, than the characters in the first three, and I think that's why it's very distinctive from, you know, the first Lord of the Rings sort of trilogy. But there's no freaking way that this movie needed to be 3 hours. I'm sorry. I was just like, oh, come on. Like, you know, because once they show you something huge, like that opening sequence where, like, the dwarf kingdom gets attacked by the dragon. You're just like, oh my god! Like, I was just like, this is awesome! And then, you know, it kind of like settles in, and that takes a little too long to get going again, you know, because once he teases you with that, you're just like, I want more! You know? Like, oh, you can't. Yeah, so you're just like, but anyway, Dark Knight Part 2. Yeah, I know that you and I differ a lot. I did very much of the same thing. I bought the Blu-ray right when it came out, and I buy all the DC stuff, like the DC animated stuff. It doesn't matter what they are. I buy them. I pre-order them on Amazon. I don't wait for reviews or whatever. Wow. I'm just very much a fan of like the DC characters, not so much the comics, but the characters. And I think that the animated people do a really much better job with the characters than what they do in the comics. So I tend to pre-order them, you know, without even thinking about it. So when that sucker came in, I sat down with Amy, my wife, and I was like, we're going to watch these back to back. And she was like, okay. And I was like, poor thing. And so I watched part one, and it was really funny because part one, you know, there were a lot of things like in our last podcast that bugged me about part one. And watching them a second time, they kind of stuck out more. And I really feel that I was really forgiving of part one because I was just so kind of psyched that I was seeing like, oh my gosh, this is an animated version of part one. And now watching it a second time, its flaws were even more, glaring to me. Right, and I was like, I don't know. So anything that I said about part one kind of stuck out for me. And then once I got to part two, I was kind of hanging on to all the things that bugged me about part one, and I was kind of looking for them in part two. So I was kind of going into part two more jaded than maybe I should have been. But like I said, this past Saturday, I said to you over the weekend, I did rewatch part two, and while certain sequences seemed better to me, I still think the whole thing is very flawed, and you know, I could go into those reasons, you know, after you talk about like what you loved about it.
Well, I think my favorite sequence again was just that Joker sequence, because once that happened, man, I think because when I watched it, it was actually around the time of some shootings, even though that seems like every week now.
Jeez.
So it was just kind of nuts because Joker just kept firing his gun.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
He didn't do one or two, like, bang, bang. He was slaughtering people.
Yeah, he was going crazy.
You know, as much as it's done in the comics, and I kind of see what you're saying now about the animated. It's almost like the animated movies have become just a whole new way to appreciate the characters because, you know, you get a lot of the movement and you get so much more in some ways when you're watching the movies. Like, even in the comics, you know, you'd see Joker with the crowbar, which was done great in A Death in the Family, and you're like, okay, that, to me, that sequence equated to what I saw in Dark Knight Returns Part 2.
Yeah.
But there's really not much else. You see Joker and he's always talking or something, but in Dark Knight Returns Part 2, he was off the leash in a major way, and the whole art direction of that scene was just, to me, so well done. And man, I don't know, that at once I saw that, I was like, wow. And,
yeah, but they left out the most powerful moment of like the Joker's death in that book, which we did talk a little bit about over the weekend, which to me is, you know, there's so many iconical moments in the Dark Knight Returns comic. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many powerful moments, and a lot of them are locked up in the voiceover, you know, which they pared out a lot of in the two books. And since I did see first part one, I did go back and read the Dark Knight Returns comic, the graphic novel, and I was reading it and I was like, okay, I get why they got rid of the voiceover, or the narration. But I don't think that it all needed to go. I really think that you could have kept a voiceover in there with a lot of the dialogue, pared it down, and kept the most powerful bits, and you would have had a much stronger film altogether. But the thing that bugged me about that Joker sequence that they take out is because basically, right, the Batman tries to break his neck, the Joker's neck, because he's had it. He's like, F it, I'm done. All the people that I'm responsible for having been killed because you killed them and I let you live, it's over. Like, we're done. This is it.
Right.
You know, it ends tonight. And he goes to break his neck and he can't do it. And there's that sequence in the movie and in the book where the Joker breaks his own neck. But in the book, the Joker is very much like, you couldn't do it. You still couldn't finish me off. After all the crap that I did, you couldn't finish me off. I won. And he twists his body in order to kill himself.
Right.
Because he knows that, you know, he's paralyzed. There's so much damage that, you know, and he starts laughing, you know, or grinning, you know. And in the movie, he says, I won because I made you lose control. Now, I can't remember if that's in the book, but in the book, it's very, from what I remember, it's very much the Joker's like, I won because I still couldn't get you to cross that edge. You know what I'm saying? And to me, I remember even reading it in the beginning, like when I was a teenager, thinking like, that's messed up. Like, that is so powerful. And they took that out of the book. And I was just like, why? Why did you take that out? It's like
out of the movie.
Yeah, out of the movie. Because it's the best line. It's probably one of, if not the best lines in the whole book. You know what I mean?
Well, I do. But he did, in the movie, he does twist his neck.
Yeah, he does that. And that's
he does that. And that was effective. I almost am beginning to think that there were some lines in the book where they just said, you know what, we're going to just leave that in the book. It's almost like if you're a musician, there are some songs you can't sample.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just some songs that are so good that if you rip that off, it's just, a lot of people are just going to say, well, that was in the book, and that's awesome. So it's a fine line they had to walk with this thing. I think there's a tendency with the way they produced it, they were a little bit overprotective of what they were putting out there because they were just walking that fine line. I think they knew they weren't going to make a lot of people completely over the top happy with it.
Yeah.
In the same way Watchmen, you know, came out.
That movie's garbage. Don't even get me started on that thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, in some ways, I am satisfied with the movie and happy with it simply because they made it. And that's that you know, might be seen as kind of just the lame way out. Like I said, though, there's definitely things I can nitpick, but I don't know, man. Working on that movie would have been so scary, but at the same time awesome. But at the same time, it's like, well, creatively, you know, how far can you push stuff? Because look at that book, like, kind of like you're saying, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I'm not even asking them to push stuff. I think the look of both the films was too brightly lit. I think the palette really veers away from the graphic novel, the color palette. And obviously you can't, well, I'm not saying you can't, you could do a whole movie with grays and darks and,
and
really powerful. You know, I mean, they did that with the original animated series, right? They drew everything on black paper, you know, so black background paper. So everything would be dark. So I think it's also this thing where I think Blu-ray digital, like, really punches everything up. Like, I don't know about you, but I have a plasma TV and the colors are really good. It's not one of the newer, like, you know, digital TVs, which I noticed that they really punch up, like,
really.
If you don't have your settings right on some of the newer, like, newfangled, like, thin TVs, the the picture looks very, for lack of a better term, like digital. It looks very much like videotape. You know what I'm saying? Don't have that problem on my plasma. Everything looks very, very good on it. But the thing that I notice is that with animated stuff, that everything looks really good on Blu-ray. I mean, you can't dispute it. And so the lines are very sharp. Everything's very crisp. The colors pop. And I really feel that they kind of went with like flat color tones in that, but they didn't. It's too bright. It looks too good. And I think the line work is too crisp. And I really wish that they had gone with more of a sort of brush technique or something like that, or a looser line, you know, with the drawings. I mean, because I think it looks too slick. It looks too nice. And I feel that this material deserves sort of like the Ralph Bakshi treatment, you know what I'm saying? Like something that looks a little dirtier, a little grittier, a little grimier. And you know, and where I did see that, I looked at the extras on the Blu-ray, and they had commentary from the director where he was doing like talking about certain scenes and where they ran and they ran the storyboards. And I was watching the storyboards for the sequence when Superman first shows up with the, you know, the Nazis in the 7-Eleven.
Oh yeah.
And then the actual the county fair, you know, Joker sequence.
Yep.
And the drawings for those, they were storyboard drawings, and they were really good looking storyboard drawings. But you know, they had thick lines, you know, thick lines around the curves, like you would see almost not in a comic book, but like you would see like in an old, maybe like Johnny Quest cartoon or Space Ghost or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Where it kind of looked a little retro, but it still looked really good. And I was watching it and I was like, that's what it should have looked like. It should have looked like that. You know what I'm saying? And that was the big thing I couldn't get over, especially being somebody like being someone who really appreciates visuals a lot and what the original book looked like. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Oh, no, it does. I mean, I almost think that they said, okay, let's just hang with neon. We'll have a lot of neon and then a lot of dark.
Yeah.
And the line, you're right, the line was very tight. And I, who knows what that's from? I can't imagine they didn't try to do something that was more expressive and you know, something that did give that sort of grittier emotion, because it becomes tame, that in that way. Like the final product is a little tame because of that aesthetic, and it's almost like leaning on almost a younger side of the spectrum. You know,
it's really funny because I think that a lot of the DC animated stuff has really been influenced by anime. Mm-hmm. The current stuff, and a lot of it's very funny because I was talking with a friend a long time ago where I was talking about a newer anime series, I can't remember what, and an older anime series, and I had been watching some older stuff that I had discovered on Netflix, you know, renting the discs, and I was like, I don't know, man, there's a quality about the older stuff because they're hand drawn. You know what I'm saying?
You're talking about the analog and digital argument.
Yeah.
Right?
But I think that the older hand-drawn stuff has this organic quality that that they are not even trying to recapture now with you know, the computer artwork, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that I don't know. I don't know whether it's like rendering in Photoshop or whatever computer animated software that they're using, you know, whether if it's After Effects or who knows what, Maya, or I don't know what they're doing, but it's just that if there was any kind of comic book project that you were going to try and stretch, that you were going to try and make an animated film that was like, oh, this is different, this is a work of art, it should have been The Dark Knight Returns, you know?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
I agree. No, I have to agree with that. But the way we approach anime here, and I think when we were talking, you know, of course, like Mononoke and Miyazaki stuff came up.
Yeah.
Or Miyazaki. But that's a whole different mindset. And you remember those shorts they did, the Batman shorts, where some of the Japanese houses did do?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember
those. I mean, that, to me, that is more in the vein of where it should have went.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just so much more expressive, but there's also so many more lines and frames and to me Japanese animation's awesome. And yeah. instead, you know, there is some motion. You could definitely see some of the motion blur going on. To me it looks like After Effects motion blur. But it could be Cinema 4D. It could be Maya. Stuff like that. Is something worth researching, but yeah, I see where you're coming from. But still, I mean, is it a movie that you look fondly on, or is it something that you would watch again, or is it something where you're kind of like,
I've watched it like twice already, and I obviously didn't hate it, or else I wouldn't watch it again.
Right.
I mean, I think they're good. I don't think they're great.
Right.
And it's really funny because, like, we were talking about Miyazaki and, like, the DVD releases, that part mm-hmm. of the extras, they give you, like, the full movie. Like, you could watch the whole movie storyboarded. Like, you could watch the whole thing. And I was thinking Dark Knight Returns. I was like, God, just let me watch the storyboards. Like, let me
see
the whole movie with all the voice tracks and everything with the storyboards. And I was just like, oh, I would love to watch that. That way, because the storyboard artists, like, you know, it's not full animation by any means, but to me it was like seeing the storyboards and the movement flip and stuff like that, even that extremely limited animation was more compelling to me than what I had just watched. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I gotta check that stuff out.
It's really interesting. It's just like really, once you, and they weren't colored, right? So it's black and white art, line art. And I was just like, wow, this is maybe because I'm artistic. I like to draw cartoons. Maybe to me, it was just more fascinating to watch that than actually seeing the animated stuff, which to me, you know, again, looks very sort of, you remember when digital filmmaking sort of first started coming out and digital cameras were coming out and they were like, oh, it makes everything look flat. That's the way this looked to me. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I went back and started looking through some of my other DC animated, you know, movies. And uh-huh. some of them I only have on DVD because I had purchased them before I'd gotten a Blu-ray player. And one of the ones that I had was Wonder Woman, which I don't know if you've ever seen. It's really good. It's actually really decent. And I put the Wonder Woman DVD into my Blu-ray player, and my Blu-ray player does a pretty good job of, like, upscaling, you know.
Oh, cool.
But with animated stuff, you're still not going to get the quality that you get on Blu-ray, like the crispness of it. But watching that animated movie on Blu-ray, on DVD in my Blu-ray player, there was, you know, there's obviously a little bit of blurriness and pixelation or whatever that you're going to get because it's being upscaled. But the softness of line on the DVD, I was like, man, maybe I should go back and watch The Dark Knight, like, with the DVDs that they gave me. You know what I mean?
Right. That's interesting. Well, I don't know, man. It just brings up a lot of different questions about just texture in general, you know?
Yeah.
And grain and how much analog do you put back into the digital product? I know with audio, just because I've been working on a Pro Tools project for the past few months, a big part of what's happened is, you know, everything went super digital, kind of like we're talking about with the production of these films. And then slowly, as the software got better and was able to mimic the analog stuff so well, the analog sound now has been coming back into production across the board.
Uh-huh.
So it's really interesting, and it's like, that little bit of introducing like a hand-drawn element or something that is just kind of from a human in the final product, I find myself responding better to work like that than stuff that's just purely digital. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also interesting too, though, because I remember there was a Shazam versus Superman animated thing, and I have
I watched that. I actually watched that when I was away in Folsom. I like that.
Yeah, it was really good, and I watch, and I have that on Blu-ray.
Some great fights in that.
really good fights.
Really good fights.
Yeah, and that was directed, I think, by this guy named Joaquin Dos Santos, and he directed. You remember when they first started releasing some of these straight to DVD videos, they would have shorts on them, and he directed a lot of those shorts. And from what I understand, that guy's into martial arts. And he's really a great, those shorts that, like, I think there was a Jonah Hex short and a Spectre short, and I think there was a Catwoman one too, and I think I don't know that he directed all of those, but he directed like maybe two out of the three, and he's really good, and I'm like, why don't they give him a full feature, you know? But talking about the Shazam versus Superman thing, watching that on Blu-ray, the crispness of the picture did not bother me because there was an aspect to it that I felt like, oh, they're doing a really good job with this, you know? And come to think of it, his shorts, they look really good. A Green Arrow one I think he did too.
Really? And
yeah, he's a really good animation director.
There's an extreme, like, kind of kinetic energy, you know, with his stuff.
Yeah.
I felt like the whole, even when they were just doing the talking scenes, I was like, it was exciting to me.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Of course, most of the movie, though, I couldn't believe it. I would pass out on it at night. I'd be like, man, I would wake up the next morning and be like, that was a lot of fighting. I enjoyed that part of it. And but you're right, that it was a different thing, though. I don't think those had a lot of neon involved. It seemed like a very even kind of color balance, if I remember.
Yeah.
On those. So they weren't playing, you know, with that kind of thing. But I mean, as far as I think the pacing and the way the stuff was behaving, was definitely engaging for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and it could just be the attitude of it. Because the attitude of the Dark Knight to me seemed, it's very somber. And it almost felt like, you know, we look, guys, we made this thing, we pushed it to as much as we could, but there is a certain subtlety or kind of timidness to the final product. And I think, even with, and the note I was going to make, I love Peter Weller, but there was a certain attitude that came through in his voice, which was, it was almost like, I don't really care attitude.
Yeah.
And that came through when I saw the premiere. He didn't even want people taking pictures of him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know the guy, and I love his work, and I don't want to crap on his career or his talent, because he's talented. But, you know, I guess, as fanboys, you know, we really pay attention to stuff like that, and I think that's why, you know, that Superman trailer has gotten a lot of people excited, is because there's a tremendous amount of heart and what seems to be real drama in there, with the right amount of nostalgia, but a huge kind of almost, you know, forward progress with, there's some newness there to it.
Yeah.
So it's so hard with Dark Knight Returns, because you want to pay it homage, you know? You want to do something cool and new. And then at the same time, you have a whole, you know, like, production on top of that. It's not an independent work. So,
yeah, no.
You know, and you know, Bruce Timm, right? He's kind of the guy who spearheaded the whole animation thing in the beginning, right? With Batman and...
Yeah.
The original animated series, right?
Yeah.
So I would think he has kind of the I don't know, the attitude to drive stuff a certain way, but I guess you see it more with, at least I think I see it more with the features, with films. Like if you have someone like a Jon Favreau who's doing Iron Man, or if you have a Christopher Nolan who's doing Superman, I tend to believe that I'm seeing a pretty pure vision.
You mean the Batman, Christopher Nolan doing Batman, not
Superman. With Batman, and even with the production on Superman, you can kind of see that there's a focus. There's a real great focus. And with Dark Knight Returns, I felt like it wasn't completely even. So yeah. There might have just been a lot of groups getting together saying, okay, what's the best way we can present this without pissing people off, but paying homage to the original work. So
yeah,
you walk, it's interesting, that line.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Peter Weller, because I think I mentioned that too, is that in part two, you know, I think he's got obviously the guy's a genius. He's like some kind of, I don't know what his master's in education. He's like a doctorate of physics.
Art teacher. He's a musician. I mean, he's for real. The guy,
he's Buckaroo Banzai.
He's Buckaroo Banzai. Yeah.
But I the thing that really just bugged me is, you know, you were saying like it had an attitude of like he didn't care. I just thought he was kind of very flat. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Andrea Romano gets all this credit for, like, directing a lot of these things. And sometimes I think the voice work in some of them is just not up to par, you know. I think that there was a level of emotional intensity that just did not come through in Weller's voice, you know. Especially, right. We talked about that scene where he's, like, giving the speech to, you know, the sons of Batman, like, on the horse. And, sure. you know, and I was just like... This didn't move me at all. Like, right, you know, right, and there right. was a part of me that was just like, why didn't they just get Kevin Conroy for this? Like, really?
Well, I mean, I think that's what everyone's question is always, that if he's not there, you're like, well, why?
Yeah, yeah. And there was a part of me that just felt like every time I heard Peter Weller speak, especially in the second part for some reason, I just kept hearing RoboCop. Like, you know, like RoboCop, you know, like Batman, like, you're gonna stop now, you know, and it's just like, well, that almost seems like RoboCop to me, you know, dead or alive, you're coming with me. Like, I just really, there was definitely a lack of inflection in certain voice delivery. You know who was awesome was whoever did Jim Gordon's voice.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, he was at the premiere for the first one, too, and, he had just the right color on it, the right inflection, like, very natural, you know?
Yeah.
Really, really cool work. And I love the girl. I still love Robin. I thought she was great.
Yeah, she was pretty good, too. I really, whoever did Jim Gordon's voice, I'm looking him up right now, I just think that he just did a, solid job. There was like a sensitivity to it, like, and you could sense, yeah, Commissioner Gordon, David Selby,
yeah,
you could sense that this was like a guy on his way out, but without being like too mopey, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, and it's just interesting. There were a lot of sequences that I liked. I just felt like the watching the second time around, I felt that, the like you said, the Joker sequence was much more powerful.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The whole sequence, you know, on the, you know, it's what was really the David Letterman show, you know what I mean? Like,
right,
when
right.
when he kills the therapist this time, I don't know if I was paying more attention or whatever, but I was like, holy shit, he just killed the therapist in front of the audience. You know, and I knew that it was coming, but for some reason it hit me harder. But I really felt like it's interesting. I was talking to your friend when I met him over the weekend, and I was saying, I think that they really, what I did like was the Superman-Batman fight. I think they uncovered some layers in there that I hadn't really seen in the book, you know, which was in the book, it's like a savage fight, and like, you will always remember, you know, the one man who beat you. And I think in the movie, and maybe this is just me because I'm a big Superman fan, that I feel like in the movie they kind of insinuated that maybe Batman couldn't have really won that fight, or he didn't really win, you know, or that there was more ambiguity to the fight than what was in the book. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. I really feel like when they're fighting, there's just so much of Clark like, dude, let's stop this. Let's. Why are we doing this? Just like give up. Like this is silly. You know what I mean? And even when he gets hit with the kryptonite arrow, I kind of don't feel like he's down for the count. You know?
Right.
That's
interesting. I mean, well, the whole time we kind of know that Batman's got a plan.
Yeah.
You know. So, but I thought the fight was well represented for sure. I mean, just seeing it, I was sitting there geeking out over it.
Yeah.
You know?
I almost feel that they might have held back a little bit, because in the book it's so savage, you know what
I
mean?
Oh, yeah.
When you're reading it. And in the movie it's like, it almost seems like Batman's holding back a little, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't
mm-hmm.
you think?
Well, I mean, he still did everything he did in the book. I mean, he plugged in and...
Yeah. But he even mentions, he said, like, well, and he probably does in the book, too. I can't remember the exact. He says, like, I could have used a better binding agent on the kryptonite.
Right.
I could have done it much worse. You know, and I almost feel like Batman should have just been, like, kicking his ass, you know? Because
sure.
I feel like in the book, like, Batman's like, I've had enough of you. I've been dealing with you all my life, and this is it. This is the one moment where I'm just going to put you in your place. And I'm tired of everyone thinking that you're the top dog. I'm going to show you who top dog is. And in the movie, it seems to me like he's holding back a little. It's, yeah, Clark, I'm not really going to take you out, you know?
Well, I think that's kind of indicative of the whole movie, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just holding back a little bit,
yeah.
you know? And we wanted it to be wild and just more of what the book was, which
yeah.
is, I mean, come on, that's like a guy at the height of his, you know, creative powers, you know,
yeah.
like drawing one of his finest works. So the movie captures some of that, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting that we're talking about this, because that's what I feel like is missing, the intensity of the comic.
Mm-hmm,
I don't
mm-hmm.
feel that these movies were as intense. And now I'm thinking, if they were as intense, could it have been like a rated R movie? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it absolutely should have been.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. When I was a little kid, I remember living, you know, in Jersey, New York. It was probably in New York when this came out. The Elephant Man came out, and I don't know
oh,
if
wow.
you remember, like, when the Elephant Man came
oh, no.
out, it was like
I remember when it came out, but I still have not seen it to this
oh,
day.
Oh, you should. It's a beautiful movie, but
I probably won't see that.
Oh, you should see it. I think you would like it, but
it's nightmares.
David Lynch.
Yeah, I know, but I have nightmares from all his movies.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and you don't like horror movies or
yeah.
But it's not a horror movie. But anyway, the whole point of it is I remember, you know, when the Elephant Man came out, you would see all the posters. It was, you know, black and white posters, very mysterious, very like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to my mom, Mom, can we see the Elephant Man? And my mom saying, like, no, you can't see the Elephant Man. You're too young. And I said, well, why? Is it scary? And she said, no, this is for grown-ups. And I was
right.
like, I kind of don't understand that, because I was like, is it violent? Is it monsters? Is it scary? And she said, like, no, it's just for grown-ups. And when I was a kid, I didn't understand that. And
right.
when I was older, I did see the Elephant Man. And I was like, you know, technically speaking, there's not really... There's no violence. I mean, there's obviously you get to see his face, and that would be terrifying to children. But there's an intensity in that movie
mm-hmm. right.
that, you know, is there, and that hangs over the whole movie
mm-hmm.
and could be very traumatizing to not even just a child, but, you know, a younger teen who might not be able to handle it. And I feel that there is an intensity to The Dark Knight Returns that is almost equal, not equal to the Elephant Man, the movie, but is as powerful in its own way, you know, using the
yeah.
Elephant Man as probably a bad example. And I feel
I don't
that...
No, I don't think it is. I think that you actually hit on a really good point there. It did deserve. It did absolutely deserve.
Yeah.
An R rating. And I'm you know, that Joker thing almost warranted one for sure, didn't it?
Well, Yeah, I mean, I could see that, but I don't know that this movie warrants an R rating, but I feel like a true adaptation with, like, the darkness and the, like, ugh, I'm old and I'm fighting and the world is collapsing around me and,
sure,
you know, I'm on my last... I feel that something like that would probably, like, a true... like adaptation as far as like tone and action, and maybe that would be an R, because I don't think The Dark Knight Returns is a book that I would give to anybody that's maybe even under 13. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's funny. I think I read it. Ah, man, I must have been around that age.
Yeah, and I didn't even understand it back then.
Yeah, but you're right, man. It that's probably what that's probably what it is. They were probably walking that line of like, we, because is it even rated?
It's
at
PG-13,
all?
I think.
Yeah.
All these new DC, they're all PG-13.
Now it's really making a lot more sense to me about how. Yeah. It is an, dude, it's totally an R-rated deal, man.
It should be, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, you're right, that Joker sequence really comes close.
That comes really close, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really funny, yeah. But, I mean, I'm not going to say, these are not a failure by any means, but it's sort of like Dark Knight Returns light, you know?
That's exactly what it is.
And that's what I felt about the Watchmen movie. Well, the Watchmen movie is a whole other thing where I was bored, and I felt that they didn't capture the tone of the books, because everything, again, so brightly lit. Zack Snyder, very slick, very into effects, very into, like, hey, you can see everything. Whereas, like, with The Watchmen, I'm thinking Taxi Driver. I'm thinking Mean Streets.
Yeah, now you're
thinking,
but, you know.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. We don't usually get those kind of texture. You know, Dave Gibbons lends itself perfectly to what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the colorist, whoever originally colored it, too.
The colors were, I mean, yes, because then you almost can feel the paper more when you get into that kind of, that vein of, what is it called? Is it mise-en-scene, it's just art direction, really, right?
Yeah.
That's a really good point, man. I'm actually really glad we did this podcast, because, you know... For a while, I wanted to talk about it, but I've been, you know, like I said, I appreciated that it was made, but it's not my favorite movie. And it, now that we're talking about it, man, it just makes so much sense that they have corporate decisions they have to make. And to me, it feels like that. It feels like in this case, that's what happened. I'm actually curious to know if any of the Dark Knight Returns stuff, even though it's Superman, but any of the Dark Knight Returns kind of stuff will creep into the new Superman movie at all.
I think they're mostly dealing with, like, Zod and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what filters out from, you know, the actual comics into the Man of Steel movie. But it's interesting, you know, we're talking about the Man of Steel, and, you know, like, one of my big things is I miss the underpants. You know, I miss the classic... costume. Right. I want the classic costume. And you know how, like, in the comics now, they have a new costume, which is absolutely horrid. And I actually do think that the Man of Steel costume is not very well done. But I guess today, DC, on Comixology and digital platforms, they released, like, a digital first comic called Adventures of Superman, and they're using the old costume.
Interesting.
And I'm like, why would they do that? Because apparently it's like an anthology series. And it's an anthology series, but the first issue, you know, is Superman, like, lifting something, and there's rubble, and he's got the underpants on, and it's the classic costume. And so I went to Comixology today at lunch, and it was 99 cents, and I don't really believe in Comixology because I don't want to download, you know, I don't, unless you're going to give me a PDF or whatever, you know, I don't want to purchase your digital comics. You know what I'm saying? Give me something for my money. Don't just let me watch it on the cloud. But anyway, it was 99 cents, and, you know, there's ways of, you know, keeping your Comixology comics if you really want to do it. So I was like, 99 cents, cool, I'll check it out. Thinking that when I bought the book, it wouldn't be Underpants Superman. It would be the new Superman. But it wasn't. It was Underpants Superman. And I was so happy. And not only that, the story was really good. The art was really good. And it was like the classic characterization of Superman, where he's like very sympathetic, he's strong, but the villain in the piece is kind of like out of control, and he's trying to help him, and he kind of gets caught up, and there's a little kind of twist at the end, and it's 22 pages for 99 cents. So you know, I was very happy with it, and I was posting on Facebook. I was like, the underpants are back, baby! Like, on our Twitter feed, I was like, the underpants are back! You know, I was, like, so happy. And it wasn't just the underpants, you know? It was the fact that it was, like, the Superman that I loved, you know, which is a very sort of straightforward hero, you know, and he cares about what he's doing, and he's not just some prick with the costume. Which is what I felt like they did in the DC revamp. So it's Adventures of Superman. If you want to check it out, it's on Comixology. And if you're a Superman fan who was, like me, I dropped all the Superman books because I've been collecting them for a long time. Yeah, and I was finally like, I'm done. So right, Comixology, well, that made me very happy today.
Real quick, you got to tell me, what is the fascination with the underpants? The fact that it's just the original deal?
No. This is the thing, and this is the thing that everyone's like, why are you so hung up on the underpants?
No, I'm not being cheeky. No.
No, I totally understand. No, I totally understand what you're saying. I don't care. I do not care if you redesign Superman's costume. As a matter of fact, I think it could use a redesign, okay? I don't care about that. My point with the Superman costume, and it's really funny because when they did it in the new DC 52, you know, I was kind of debating with one of the Ain't It Cool reviewers, like, why did they get rid of it? It looks stupid. All they did was take away his underpants. And, you know, the guy was like, well, you know, back in the 30s, you know, you're something about like, oh, your penis might show through the spandex. And so you had to have underpants over the spandex. And I was like, no, that's not why. Because it's a design. You've got a big, the graphic design of Superman's costume, color-wise, is brilliant because it's blue. It gets broken up by the red in the middle, and then blue again, and you've got the red boots and the red cape. The design is perfect. The way that the color breaks down in the image is perfect. It's the perfect balance. By taking away what Jim Lee did with taking away the underpants and saying that he redesigned the costume by taking away the underpants isn't a redesign. It's just taking a good element out of something that was well designed and calling it a redesign, and it's not. Mm-hmm. It's just it takes a good design and makes it crappy. You see what I'm saying? So basically, now all you've got is a big blue blur of a costume with an S shield and maybe a belt, a red belt to slightly break things up, but it destroys a design that has been around for 75 years almost and has worked really well. And it's more of the way the color breakdown works and the way the palette of the costume works. And it's all about design for me. It breaks down really well. Now, if you want to take those colors, move them around, get rid of the underpants, you know, change some things, there's this site called Project Rooftop on the internet, and it's all these artists, and what they do is kind of like redesign superhero costumes.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a cool site, and they've done some really interesting, they've had artists like, you know, from all over, people that just submit stuff, interesting Superman designs that don't have the underpants, but are really well designed. And taking out the underpants isn't a new design. It's just taking out the underpants. You see what I'm saying? And that's what drives me crazy. That's not design. Taking something out of a design that works is not design. Designing something new and fresh and with great color balance and great lines and whatever, that's design. You know that as well as I do. So for me, and then when you see all the Man of Steel ads, like, his crotch is in shadow. It's like, what are we afraid of? Like, what is that? Is it that his cock is going to be like hang? Like that's, they want to hide the bulge. Just put the underpants back on. Why are you going to have him in shadow in all the ads? You know what I'm saying?
What? So to this day, you still don't know what's going on with Superman's crotch.
Well, what do you mean? Like in the
new movie.
In the new movie, well, I don't care what's going on with his crotch. I'm just saying it's really funny how, like, he has this new superpower where it's like shadow crotch or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just like, okay, well, why did you get rid of the underpants? It's like the reason everyone wants to get rid of the underpants is because it's like underwear on the outside. And I'm like, yeah, but that's like a superhero thing. You know, that's just been around forever. And if anyone should have it, it should be the dude that originated it. And they don't have to look like tighty whities. They could be like wrestling shorts, or, you know, down to his thigh or something, so that it maybe looks more like a track outfit or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I mean, look, I think you're a purist, and I think you like the way that they did it right the first time. So why would you change it? Look. I wasn't a fan when they put nipples on the Batman costume either. So
yeah.
It's the same thing. It's like, okay, we're just going to change it a little. It's like, no, if you're going to change it, you change it a lot and make it good.
Yeah.
You know, so, but we can't have everything.
No, we can't have everything.
No. And
I'll accept the movie. If it's a good movie, I'll be like, that's a good, and it embodies about Superman what I loved about the character. Then I'll like it, you know, and
right. You
know, I'll accept underpantsless Superman, but I miss the underpants, or I just miss a design that worked. You know what I'm saying? Give him a cloak, give him pants. You know, I don't care, but it's the whole same thing with the Jim Lee like redesign of Wonder Woman when they put pants on her. I just thought it was an ugly costume. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Put pants on Wonder Woman. It doesn't matter. But you're drawing her the same way as if she didn't have pants. You know?
Right.
They're skin tight pants. It leaves nothing to the imagination. So if you're gonna make a bold statement, put her in jeans or whatever. But you're not making a bold statement. You're just putting her in skin tight pants. You know, so it's blue as opposed to flesh colored. I don't, you know, that's not designed to me. That's just, you know, whatever. Just taking something and rearranging it, you know. So anyway, that's those are my two cents. But all right, I've been rambling on about Superman's underpants for too long. Anyway, so we've kind of broken down what we liked about Dark Knight Returns. Talked about The Hobbit a little bit. Anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I'm really glad we got to the bottom of it. I just feel like we've actually accomplished something, and I do want to thank, you know, DC for doing the movie and making it, you know, the best that they thought would, you know, it would be for them. And and I think it's, hopefully it's a story that down the road, you know, we'll get to see it again.
That would be great.
You know, in another, I don't care if 10 years, 20 years goes by, and hopefully we're all still here and they decide to do it again, and I'll be there watching it. So and hopefully it'll be rated R next time. So
Well, the only thing that I can say about it is I liked it, and I did like it a decent amount, but I wanted to love it and I didn't love it, you know.
Right.
And
right.
Part 2 being the climax of the story kind of just made me realize, like, oh, this could have been better. You know.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. So anyway, well, this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn, and that's Ian Scheller, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.